Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're talking about the amateur today, but first, of course, get into a little news and what we've been watching. Got some news last night that broke my heart. You are probably just like, I wasn't watching the show anyway, it's fine. Mythic Quest has been canceled.
Yeah, I did hear that. So I have to ask, obviously it means there's no more side quests, but with Mythic Quest, is it in a spot that at least it's reasonably, like, you can go, oh, okay, like, that ends in a way that I'm not too dissatisfied, or did this season end in a cliffhanger such that you're just like, fuck, why didn't
it
they
was,
just...
It was an emotional cliffhanger. Kind of a story cliffhanger, but Rob McElhenney, along with his magnanimous, like, thank you all for supporting the show, you know, we appreciate what we had, also announced that Apple, this feels a little unprecedented outside of, like, maybe an animated show. Apple is giving them the money to film an ending for the show.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yep.
Dude, so you're going to get a Mythic Quest movie, basically?
No, it's not that level of money. It's...
Oh, okay.
You have the space, you have the time, you have the money. Get everybody together, film a 10-minute PS to the show.
Okay. Not to say that isn't still unprecedented. Like, you know, getting an ending, like, that is rare nowadays. Mm-hmm. Like, being able to, like, do whatever, 10-15 minutes, that's, wow. I mean,
especially post being canceled. It's one thing to know going in, this is it, so write your ending. But, like, we've kind of sort of seen it with some animated stuff here and there, like, you know, just these little short, like, here's kind of what we're thinking things.
Yeah.
But to, because live action, you know, you got to get everybody back in the same place. No, you know, everybody's time is worth something. So, but I think the people involved in this show cared about the show and the story they're telling. So I can't imagine it was too difficult to make that happen. So, it sucks, but it's really nice that they're going to allow them to do that. Ripley's happy about it too.
I love the exclamation point she puts on things sometimes. It's just almost like perfectly timed. I'm glad, like, because I know that show, like, it wasn't just you, but I mean, I started, like, I'm gonna, like, eventually, like, I was eventually going to hit it, like, there's just so much stuff out there, and I was gonna hit it in the summer, but, like, now hearing that, I'm definitely gonna check it out. It's just kind of sad that it's just bad timing, like, they just really, I mean, they literally just finished their season.
Just finished the finale, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they would have had this for, because the show has faced a lot of hurdles, man, which a lot of shows have. But, like, this show started pre-production pre-pandemic and then premiered basically during the pandemic and lockdowns. And so much so that they wrote an episode about that after they had already finished the first season. It's just... You know, and the strikes on top of that, and for them to have finally been in a, like, hey, we ended our fourth season and now we can start production on the season five, and it be not a show that's gotten, which four seasons over 5 years is fine, but
yeah,
like it's not a long show. So those 10 episodes or 8 episodes or whatever they do, you know, easily could have been pumped out once a year, and mm-hmm. they would, there was nothing on the horizon to like pause any of the production. They were gonna, that's why we get, basically why we got SideQuest this year, is because they had time. And like now it's over. So it's unfortunate, but the people involved in the show are just all amazing. So seeing what they do next will be fun, exciting. If you do get around to it, this season I do think is a bit of a low for the show. It's good, but I don't think it was as good as it could have been.
Okay. Oh, that sucks.
Since we're talking about Apple Plus, did you get around to watching this week's episode of Studio? The Studio?
Oh, God, yes. The missing reel, dude. Man, this show continues to just double down on just, like, great work.
I this is a show that, like, if more people don't watch, they're going to have to cancel it, because I can't imagine, this has to be a very expensive show to produce.
Yeah, like, it's super, like, this, like, I keep on saying that, like, I keep on, like, whenever I finish an episode, I'm like, Jesus, that's my favorite episode. But, like, literally, The Missing Reel is, like, my favorite episode, because it's dealing with tropes that I love. I love, like, mysteries. I love, like, the L.A. noir of it all. And, like, just, like, the Chinatown.
The Chinatown thing. Shit, man. Like, it's Chinatown. It's just a ripoff of Chinatown.
But also, like the leaning into, like, so, like, my thing that I was super surprised by is that, what's her name? God, I can't even think of her name now. Olivia Wilde. Olivia Wilde, like, actually allowed herself to be kind of, like, lampooned in the way that, like, I mean, everybody is, like, she had that whole difficult director label.
That's the thing that really surprised me, too, because, like, you're exactly like you're saying, it's like Ron Howard comes in and plays against type. She's playing into this pigeonhole thing that, like, that they try to pin on her. Yeah. And she's like, I'm going to do it as this difficult director. It was really, really surprising. And that, and knowing everybody kind of has been coming in to do, like, versions of themselves, and Zac Efron comes in just to be Zac Efron. Like,
yeah.
And he doesn't strike me as the kind of person that would be like, no, I'm not playing this, like, jerk asshole version of myself. I just want to be nice. But, like, just they bring him in like, no. We're going to play you up as the bad guy for a little bit, and then you're just going to turn into, like, kind of a nice guy. The thing at the party where he's like, nobody likes you, man. Like, nobody wanted you here. I'm paying for this party, but you're here now, so I guess you can stay. And then what's in the box? What's in the box? And it's like, it's hats for the crew, which I paid for myself. You can't have one. And then Lane's like, fine, you can have one.
Right. You can have one. It's just so great, like, the way, like, they just take the convention of it and just kind of lean into it. Like, the Efron stuff was, like you would expect, like, it's weird because, like, you watch it and you go, yeah, Zac Efron is the guy. Like, he seems like a guy that would be a dick. And then it, like, all turns in, and he is kind of a dick, but he's also, like, he has reasons, like right. Everything in this show, he has every reason to be, to be a shithead or an asshole to Matt. You know, like even Ike Bernholtz says, he's like, you're kind of a dick, dude. But I mean, that's his role, right? Like, that is absolutely his role. And I just love that. Like, talk about something that was funny and beautiful at the same time. And then, of course, like we talk about at the end, it like falls into itself where Matt's talking and like the 35 millimeter film is rolling down the hill.
It's great.
It was beautiful. It was beautifully shot. I was laughing at it because he's like, yeah, 35 millimeter film was still there. It was still around, but you know, it was just fucking Chinatown. And then like the Chinatown music plays and I'm just like, Jesus Christ, man. This show like hit the ground running. It's running on all cylinders. And I have to say, $2 million for a 53 Corvette? Are you fucking kidding me? That's all I'm going to say. And I was just like, Jesus fucking Christ, are you fucking kidding me? Like, but again, you know, Hollywood and Hollywood studios, I mean, he's a studio chief. So of course, I mean, that was something that was kind of in the background that he was talking about, like him and Bernholtz. I loved it. It was like, Bernholtz, like, who the fuck are you? You're fucking dyeing your goddamn hair. You're fucking wearing these fucking clothes. He's like, I don't know, man. I have a lot of money. He's like, nobody likes me. I spend time alone now. And it's kind of like, it's the whole thing of like, what I love about it is that like, Bernholtz is an asshole. Like, Bernholtz's character is an asshole for doing what he's doing. But at the same time, so is Matt. And, like, you know, these guys are just basically, like, millionaires making money. So you don't feel any sympathy for them. But you kind of do. There's a twinge there. And I think it's just the way that, like, you know, again, it speaks to what you said about how, like, Seth Rogen is, like this is, like, the performance from him. But I also think like Ike Bernholtz is like, it cannot be understated how good he is.
He's a guy I don't love.
No, like, I don't love
him as either. An actor. I'm not like, he's always played kind of a version of this character, but he plays so well off of Matt that it's a little undeniable how good he is in this show, playing like this weird foil for him.
But yeah, it's like, like you said, I can't imagine it is a cheap series, but I really do hope that a lot of people start to watch it just on, and they're doing it smart. Like, I'm going to be honest, like, getting people like bringing the stars that they have, the cameos, to the forefront, like with their ads and their advertising, do it, because it's probably one of the few ways that dirt people are going to actually watch the show. So yeah, like, I really do enjoy it. It's a wonderful show. It's super smart. It's funny. And yeah, like, I can't wait to watch week to week. It is a true pleasure to watch it. Like, day of, I don't even delay it.
Yeah. I just love it so much. The only other TV I've been watching, and it's a show we've discussed before. I'm not sure if I doubt you've had time to watch them or if you even saw that they dropped, but the back half of the second season of Secrets of the Mogwai, the Gremlin show, are on Max.
No, I just, like, so I listened to Joe Dante's podcast, and I was actually listening to it on Friday, and I had heard, I was an episode behind, and he had talked about it, that it was dropping this week from last week, and I was like, oh shit, okay, I gotta get up on that, but I have not been able to catch up on it.
Yeah, I made it. I didn't get to watch all of them, but I made it through probably half of, I think they only dropped like six. So I probably watched three of them. It's so if anybody's not watching, it's weird to say spoilers for a show that's literally for like 7 or 8 year olds, because It's way more kiddie than even Gremlins was. But they've come to America and they're doing this whole exploration of America and its spiritual stuff, kind of like they were doing before with China.
So yeah, with China. Okay.
In the second episode, they come to a town and it's being haunted by the ghost of Bass Reeves.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, voiced by Keith David.
That's awesome.
And it's like stuff like that, like tying back into this country's kind of mysticism and history, and it's pretty good. Like, okay. I mean, it's a lot of, I think this back half is better than the front half. I got a little bored with the maybe it makes me insensitive, but with the, like, oh, it's the water spirit, and there's still a lot of that here, but I don't know, maybe it's just because it's dealing with American stuff that I'm a little more interested in it, which is terrible of me, but, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, it's super fun continuing exactly what they've been doing. Simu Liu is still having a lot of fun as this, like, Han Solo-esque character for this group. I'm really digging his voice performance.
That's cool. Like, I was hoping that it was something like that. I'm going to check it out. I mean, of course, like, I've not wanted to check it out. Like, so, that's always on my, list. I just haven't had a chance to, get to it, of course, because there's just so much damn content out there. I did see a few movies over the week.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. So, and then all of them I can talk about before we get to what we're the two things that we're going to talk about just really quickly. I saw The Accountant 2, the Ben Affleck, the sequel to the Ben Affleck neurodivergent action film.
I've never seen it. Everybody I know that's seen it has been like, you should watch it, you'd like it. And I just haven't seen it.
It's on Prime right now, but I would actually watch it on Max because Prime has those goddamn commercials in the middle of it. Because I was going to, I did a ramp up to it like before I went to go see it. And like, I was going to go on to Prime. And this is my, like, anti-Prime thing. And I was like, you know how, like, you can see how many commercials are on something? And so, like, I don't have the maximum Prime, right? Because I pay $130 a year for Prime so that I get the middling Prime that has commercials in it, right? It's like yep. I fucking hate it. And I'm not going to spend any more because I don't spend enough time in Prime to actually do it. But there were, like, 4 commercial breaks in it. And I was like, you know what? Let me see if there's someplace else. And of course, because it's a Warner Brothers movie, it's on Max. I watched it. So The Accountant is like definitely, it's like this movie that's okay for the first 2/3 of it. And then it has this wild third act where you just literally sit there and go, what? What is happening with this fucking movie? To which I won't ruin. I mean, it is kind of ruined because if you watch the trailer for Accountant 2, you kind of know where the thing is, and it kind of deflates the Accountant Part 1's like weird kind of editing of like Barenthal being in the movie and what Barenthal's like purpose and role is. But the Accountant 2 is a lot of fun. Like, they understood what happened. Like, okay, first off, it's 10 years, literally 9 years later, they've made this fucking sequel, right? But they understood what people liked about the first one, and they just inflated it. So it's basically a buddy movie. It's basically, I hate using this because it's a very crass way of doing it, but the movie treats Ben Affleck's character like this. It's basically Rain Man action movie. So like it, Ben Affleck is Rain Man and John Bernthal is Tom Cruise.
Okay.
And that's what you get. And I will tell you, it's a hell of a lot of fun because it's about these two brothers. And you and Ryan, right? Like, it's the whole thing of like, it really does like treat the relationship like brothers do, where there's constant pushing around, bullying, like making fun of each other. Like, you know, that whole thing is like very present through the whole runtime. So like whenever Bernthal and Affleck are on screen doing the brother stuff, which, I mean, it's a 2 hour and like 5 minute movie, and most of it is devoted to that. That's great. When it's the actual plot, which is basically like sex trafficking, like people trafficking bullshit, it's kind of like, oh God. But I mean, they're doing it just because of the fact that, you know, this is an action film. So like every action beat is very perfunctory, but the character work is surprisingly fun. So yeah, I mean, it's a lot better than the first one. I really enjoyed this one more than I enjoyed the first one. The first one, like I said, it is kind of a slog. Like through the first two thirds, it's kind of like, oh, he's neurodivergent, or like, you know, he's on the spectrum, he has autism, but that's his superpower. And like I fucking hate those kinds of movies, man. It's like especially because I've seen things where it's like Love on the Spectrum, like, you know, Love on the Spectrum has happened between the accountant and the accountant part two, and they even do like a dating scene with him in part two, which is wild. But it's like, so these are just normal people that have certain things that they can't, like, you know, certain affectations that are not normal social, like normally well adjusted, like normal accepted social behaviors, right? And like, you know, kind of like part of the thing is making sure that we accept them, because like just because you're normal doesn't mean that somebody that is neurodivergent is any less of a person. But this movie series proposes that like neurodivergent people are like, you know, are, they have a superhero, like a superhero power that can be unlocked. I mean, there's an entire school that's literally treated like the X-Men. Like these little kids are fucking helping Ben Affleck's character track down sex traffickers and people that do bad things. Like,
that's crazy.
Literally. Like, literally, it's fucking wild, dude. Like, I fucking sat there, I'm like, what the fuck? He's Wolverine, and the X-Kids are in back in, like, you know, back in that school. I mean, it's literally shot like the fucking X-Mansion. I mean, I wouldn't even be surprised if, like, it's, like, the estate adjacent to the X-Mansion that they used in the X-Men movies. It's pretty fucking wild, but if you want to see, like, you know, the Punisher team up with like Action Rain Man, yeah, I mean, it does what it's supposed to do, and it's got this like I appreciated the ending, which is like this kind of low rent, like 80s influenced like ending where the two dudes are shooting, like, you know, are like shooting up the place. It's very Lethal Weapon-esque, where they're trading quips and like they're super like, oh, we're gonna shoot these people, go now, military training. To which, like, I also saw another film. So yeah, that's all I have to say. Like, it's fun, but just be warned. Like, if you're sensitive to these things, you may want to pass on it, because it is not very sensitive towards, like, you know, spectrum autism, neurodivergent people. I mean, literally, at one point, a doctor says, literally, basically says in so many words, you know, if you're neurodivergent, you can, you know, it unlocks a power in you. It unlocks a clarity. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I literally wanted to throw my soda at the fucking screen.
I mean, maybe for some people, but, you know.
Yeah.
Mostly it's just annoying to myself. which I know I'm not on that level of, but you know, with that little bit I fall into it, I just annoyed the shit out of myself. I'm like, yeah. I just like walk into the kitchen, do one thing. Walk into the living room, do one thing. Remember, I needed to do another thing in the kitchen. Walk in the kitchen, do that thing.
Exactly. So it's just like, I mean, like I think that, like, and just as a side note, I think that a lot of us geeks have neurodivergent behavior. We just don't recognize it, right? Like, and the more I learn about what neurodivergent means and like the social ramifications of it, it's very easy to like to see that. And it's like it is truly a spectrum. Not everybody is like, not everybody is neural normative, right? Yeah. But this movie, like I said, like the first, like these, and I guarantee you there's like, if it's even a moderate hit, they'll probably make a third one, because this one is actually reasonably better than the first one. But the thing is that this whole theory of like, you know, if you're neural divergent, you have some kind of superpower to unlock. Yeah, like that's fucking wild and wildly inappropriate. I can only imagine that there's going to be some drunk ass dad that watches this fucking movie and thinks that his kid is going to be a fucking, or even the first one, and think is his fucking kid can be turned into a super soldier accountant and shit and do some fucking crazy stick fucking daredevil bullshit to his kid. Fucking assholes. Speaking of dad movies, I'm done with this now. Unless you have questions about
No.
So the second movie I saw, I don't know if I can recommend it. It's like the most artistic dad movie I've ever seen in my fucking life. Like in dad movie, I mean, like, so I saw Warfare, the Alex Garland, Ray Mendoza directed movie. The Alex Garland is the guy who, like everybody knows, as the guy who directed Civil War last year, right? This is his send-off, he said. Like, and he said it in movies. Like, he's like, this is the last movie I'll probably ever direct. Like, he's like, and even then, he's like, I had to get somebody else. Like, I helped Ray, who is an actual, like, so, like, basically, this is based off of his like, an account that, or an incident that happened to him while he was a Navy SEAL that he told Alex Garland about while they were filming Civil War. And basically, like, he's the action coordinator on Civil War. He's actually a pretty famous action coordinator. And so they came up, like, over the course of making Civil War, they came up with this concept of Warfare, which is basically about this incident that happens. Like, he's like they were Navy SEALs, a platoon of Navy SEALs in 2006. We're doing coverage during a mission, and they were doing like ops coordination, which is basically a nice way of saying like they were support for another mission for some Marines. It goes sideways because the people of Iraq, like insurgents in Iraq, ambush them, and then it's basically this 90-minute movie about this incident, because it was 90 minutes long, like this incident that happened. It's told in real time. There's no plot. There's no story. There's no fucking character. There's no score. It's literally you are dropped in. Like, so you get this thing in the beginning where you watch these guys watching a music video, and like this, like, I don't know, you've probably seen it where they're all crazy, they're howling and shit in the trailer.
Yeah.
It's like this 3-minute thing in the thing, and it's like, it's very, like I said, it's very artistic, because it doesn't give you anything like character work. It just drops you into the moment. And it starts off with this little thing of them watching the video, and then it goes right into them being in the op. And then the op goes sideways, like it. And then it's 60 minutes of like wall of sound and wall of vision is all I can say, because at a certain point, I saw it in IMAX, and I think I might have told you, at a certain point, the sound I'm actually quite curious about this, but, and I'm pretty sure that they did. At a certain point in the movie, I got headsick. I got lightheaded and headsick because of the sound. The sound was so concussive, so fucking loud, so aggressive that I literally had to put my head down between my legs and start breathing like measured breaths. But I think it was because Garland and Mendoza mixed in. So there's a certain frequency. And the French actually use this to disperse riots. There's a frequency that you can imbue into a sound, and it will make you nauseous. And the reason why I say this is because when I looked over my roll, there were at least four people that were literally bowled over like I was. I don't know if I can recommend this movie because it is very artistic, because it's, like I said, there's no plot. It's not like Black Hawk Down, where they set up something and then the mission goes wrong and then there's a whole point to it. It doesn't do that. It's very kind of like it's the most, like, you know, like we talk about A24, and A24 is like a thing where, like, this is an A24 war film, because there's no beginning, middle, or end to it. It's just, it's almost like they're trying to do. And I was reading, like, after I saw it, I was reading from Mendoza and Garland and what their intent was. And it was very much so, they were like, we wanted to give you what combat is like, and not in the traditional sense where you know these people. We just wanted to drop you in and make it an experiential thing. And to that effect, like, Logan, I'm going to tell you, like, they succeeded. Like, it is a very, like, I saw it in IMAX. I would tell anybody who goes into this, just be warned, but I would definitely say go see it in IMAX, because it is an assault on the senses, but I think that that's what their intent was. The cast is fucking amazing. Like, if you look at the cast.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. So, Will Poulter's a guy we talk about a lot. I can't imagine... Mm-hmm. Like, he gives anything except excellence. Joseph Quinn, though, is on the rise for sure. After his Stranger Things performance from a couple of years ago, he has this and Fantastic Four this year, and it's not somebody we've seen a ton from. He also Gladiator 2 last year, but which I know you enjoyed, but. The less said, the better. I didn't see Quiet Place Day One from last He's year great either. But yeah, I'm curious. I'm excited to see him grow, you know, into more things. I thought he was fine in Gladiator. He's not the problem I have with that movie.
So the cast is great, because what they're asked to do is literally inhabit the role and just be like the one that was surprising to me was Gandolfini, because
he's somebody we talked about recently too, because he's in Daredevil this season.
And the Daredevil role, like, it's actually a shock to me to see, like, because he's very mushy like his dad is. Like his dad was, and I hate comparing him to his dad, but the more I see of him, the more I feel like, oh shit, this guy is really like his dad and has his dad's specifics. And once he figures it out, like when Michael Gandolfini ages up into about like where our age is, he's gonna do fucking fantastic work. Like, that's my theory is, but here it's kind of weird to see him leaned out and not be the mushiness that he is in Daredevil or other things that I've seen him in. I mean, he played his dad's character. He played Tony Soprano in the prequel. He's like, it's weird to watch him actually not be pudgy. Joseph Quinn and what he's required to do is pretty amazing. I don't want to ruin any, like, this one is one that I don't want to ruin, because there's not much to ruin, but there's some specific things that happen. But what he's asked to do It's impressive when you think about the sustainability of it. That's all I'll say. Poulter, he makes a meal out of the things that they ask him to do. But the guy that is actually the key is the guy who plays Ray Mendoza, Defaro Woon Atai, who's actually the lead from Reservation Dogs.
I need to catch up with that show. I've heard really good things.
It's really good. It's sad, but it's really good. And I mean, I think you and I both agree that like Amber Midthunder is kind of great, and she's in that mm-hmm. too. Like that show is like, I love the fact that that show is bringing certain actors, like indigenous actors, to light and giving them like a stage. And he's the lead in the show, in the thing. And it's not apparent at first, but like he gets the most meaty role as Ray. But there's a fair decent amount, like Charlie Melton is in it. And if you know who Charlie Melton is,
he was next on my question, like, is he good? I know Charlie Melton from a show that was goofy and stupid, Riverdale, which I yes. watched in its entirety. He was a lot of fun in a role that just required him to be a himbo for the most part. He played Reggie of the Archie gang in that Riverdale. But I think he's super talented and hasn't really gotten a chance to show that. I think he's in the new season of The Beef, I want to say.
Yes. Yeah, he was cast recently in that. He's also in May, December.
Which I haven't seen.
That's a wild-ass film, dude. That is a wild film. And he plays the kid that's in question, that's a grown-ass man now. Like, you know, May, December is basically about a teacher who has a sexual relationship with a child, with one of her students. And then 30 years later, 25 years later, they're having a movie being made. And Natalie Portman is an actress studying, like wanting to do the whole, like, you know, deep dive study of this woman. And Charlie Melton plays the kid that was the student. And his role in it is pretty, like, I didn't care for much for the movie, but he's fucking amazing in it because of, like, the way that he's, like, kind of been stunted by this assault, but also, like, is, like, with this woman, and there's reasons why he's with this woman, and you find out, and it's just kind of, like, one of those things. He comes in super late to the movie, but it's like, it's weird because it's like he comes in kind of like a John Wayne hero, because he's a part of like the support that they need at a certain point. And he does exactly what you want a guy like that who comes into a shit show foobar situation and does the best he can to actually get these guys ready to like survive, the guys that are remaining to survive the situation. So like he comes in and he's like you can tell, like it's weird because it's all about like this film is a lot about, I hate using the word, but the kids use it, aura. And like, and Riz, but I mean, he comes in that late half and you see him. And it's not like any way they specifically shoot him, but you instantly know he is the leader of this group, of this second, like of the cavalry. And how he interacts with everybody, it's like everybody is acting on 10, and the guys that are like really good are like beyond 10, like 10-5, 10-6. He, Joseph Quinn, and DeFaro are like at an 11. But it's not like it's really hard because it's not like they're getting speeches or anything. It's just the way that they're approaching the work and how they just inhabit the space. It's something that I noticed about him in Bad Boys for Life. Like, where he kind of eats up the room when you watch him in there. Like, even though he's not saying anything, you're like, who the fuck is this dude? Who is this, like Keanu Reeves on steroids, bro? Because that's kind of, like, way I see him. Is like,
yeah,
he kind of,
he definitely has that kind of vibe to him.
Yeah. So, like I said, I can't recommend it, but for me, it was an interesting experience as a guy who loves war films, and also a guy who loves artistic movies and, like, the intent of it. I know that a lot of critics are liking it, but, I mean, that's part of the course with A24 stuff, right? But, like, I would be cautious the way that Dave Chen has said, has talked about the movie. I know, like, I was reading, like, some of the stuff that he was saying, and I would actually recommend, if anybody was like, I don't know, I'm not really a big war fan and I'm not an artistic guy, read what Dave Chen has said, or actually listen to what he said on podcasts, because it's very, he's very middle of the road on this movie, and he has, like, I could see how, like, his critiques are very valid, and his positive notes are very valid too. So, but this one, yeah, is very interesting. Again, Alex Garland continuing. It's kind of sad to me that just as he's starting to get cooking with gas, he's like, fuck this, man. I don't fucking like directing. Like, it's,
yeah, really, it's like, I just go back to writing.
Yeah. I mean, he's like super, like I was reading, and he's super excited to be working with Danny Boyle again on the 28 years or the 28 days franchise. He's working on the sequel right now, but I'm like, dude, like, you just started, like,
it's wild to me that there's two of those movies coming in the next year.
Yeah. And a third one that hasn't been greenlit, because Sony won't greenlight it. Like, I'm like, what? Is it that big? Like, I can only imagine that the third one is, like, a super huge movie, right? Like a kind of, like, a World War Z style movie. You know, I don't know. Like, but it's, like, wild to me that Danny Boyle, like, I feel like he's just started to get it. Like, not to say that he wasn't interesting, but he's just started to figure out his voice and, like, what is, like, going on. And you just like, nah, man, I'm cool. I don't want to do this anymore. And I blame Annihilation. Like, I remember reading about Annihilation and the shit that Paramount put him through. But I mean, you know, when you make a $150 million sci-fi movie, that's, like, ponderous and shit. And you, like, you, what the studio thinks is wasting money on, and nobody, like, I love that book. The original Jeff Vandermeer series. I love the series. I do not like that movie. Like, I have to maybe go see it again because I just, like, rejected it. But everything I've heard, like, he had put such a bad time with that movie. I could understand why you would just be soured on filmmaking, right? And just be like, fuck this. I'm going to write novels. I'm going to go back to writing novels and writing scripts for other directors. Yeah.
I mean, he did, five movies in 10 years?
Yeah.
Ex Machina, yeah. Annihilation, Men, Civil War, Warfare. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's... and then when you consider, like, writing, you know, you got The Beach, the 28 Days movies. He wrote Sunshine, but... am I right in remembering that something happened on Sunshine?
Like,
things got changed?
Yes, like, it became
the
very
studio Danny didn't like the movie, or Danny Boyle was like, no, this needs to be different, or whatever it was.
Yes, it was. It's the thing that dropped him and Boyle out of, like, favor with one another. Like, because Boyle, like, was like, it doesn't work. Like, there's a lot of, like, so it's a lot of character work there. And Boyle went in and worked with the actors and changed a lot of specifically the Cillian Murphy character was a lot more colder. He was more of a scientist and less of a man of humanity. And that's where Garland found, like, real umbrage. And it caused them to not talk until I think it was like literally like until like maybe about 3 or 4 years ago when they started to plan.
I mean, it's why we didn't get 28 months later, and we're getting 28 years later. So,
yeah. I also did Dread, a movie I fucking adore. Like,
he did a script for another movie directed by Mark Romanek. And that nobody ever fucking talks about. Never Let Me Go. I saw it in the theaters. I've only seen it one. I've seen this movie one time in 2010, 15 years ago. And there are scenes in that movie that I can't fucking forget. There's turn in that movie where you find something out that fucking stays with me, man. Like, I will just randomly think about it and be like, oh, fuck. Like, that was devastating. And I mean, it's such a good fucking script.
It really is. Like, that movie, it's like a one and done. Like, I cannot watch that movie. I've watched it once, like you said. And that ending, the ending is probably one of the best things that that Andrew Garfield has ever done. And it's so fucking heartbreaking. Like, I was haunted by that for days, that movie. Like, this is a rare movie where I've read the book and the book is nowhere near as good as the movie.
Yeah.
Nowhere near, because it actually approaches it with a very different, point of view. I know that sounds weird, and I know we're talking around it, but I mean, so few people have seen this, where it's like, if you want to go in, just be prepared. It's a gut punch of a movie, but I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to ruin it.
It's also got a great cast, but yeah, it's pretty, pretty fantastic. I love him as a writer. I haven't seen everything he directed. But, I'm with you. I can certainly see where, you know, it's just like, I don't want to deal with the frustrations of all of this, you know, when I can write a script and this can be literally be somebody else's problem. You know. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
It sucks to lose, because he does have a really unique vision for things, whether that always works or not. Like, I didn't see Men, but I've heard a lot of shit about Men.
It's very much I saw it and I'm like, okay, this is like more like a short film than it is an actual feature, at least to me. But I'm not like, I don't like trickery and fuckery sometimes in my movies, and especially with dealing what it was dealing with, it was like, okay, a little bit too twee and cute, even though it very much so resides in a horror movie spectrum, but it was just like the concept of it is a little too much, like, I don't know, almost like a music video, like, if that makes sense. Alex Garland, definitely one of those things where it's like, okay, I mean, if this is the way you're going to go out, this is an interesting way to go out. I recommend, but recommend with caution, big caution.
I know we got two more things. Did you have anything else?
No, that was it. Those are the things, like, because the other thing I was going to talk about is the main centerpiece of our thing, and also the thing that you had reminded me of. I mean, we can get into it. You reminded me of this show that was out, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right, this fucking show. And so, like, I got into two episodes.
So there's a show that dropped their entire season all at once. On Amazon Prime about a week and a half ago, and I'd seen it, and it was kind of on my, like, that it was out. I we love Kevin Bacon. So I'm like, oh yeah, Kevin Bacon has a TV show. That's interesting. I might have to check that out. And then Stephanie mentioned it. She was like, did you know that there's a new show with Kevin Bacon? It looks really interesting. I was, you know, maybe we could watch it. I was like, oh yeah, The Bondsman. Yeah. So we put it on. We didn't binge watch the entire show, but over the course of a week, we watched, was it 8 episodes? 8 half hour episodes. It is an easily bingeable show because it moves rapid. And it's Kevin Bacon. And am I wrong? Is this, it's their first TV show?
No, it's not. Like there have been other TV shows, but Blumhouse, it's not as like, so from what I understand, this is like this is the first one that they're really making a huge push on.
Okay. Yeah, it's weird. It feels weird to call it like a show piece because it's really not that showy.
But no, it is.
It is like it is kind of like them having a little more fun than Blumhouse usually has. it's supernatural light, you could call it. It riffs on so many things, but I don't know. I watched the whole thing. I don't want to get into too much because you only watch the first few episodes, but I it's fucking fun. It's so much fun.
It really is the first two episodes that I saw, like, it really, but basically, like, it sets up the concept like a pilot should, but it also, like, the second episode is very much like it's the formula of the show. Like, he's a bondsman that dies, and then he comes back from hell as hell's bondsman, so that episode to episode he gets a new bond, and he has to track down this demon or escaped soul and bring them back, or else he goes to hell. Right? He goes back to hell, but also coupled with the fact that he's an ex. Like he's separated. I'm not sure if he's separated or he's divorced. It sounds like he's divorced from his wife, and his wife is like this, like he has this whole relationship with his wife and
played by Jennifer Nettles in her biggest role to date, although she's been in The Righteous Gemstones, but
yeah,
like bits and pieces. I do think Jennifer Nettles is the weakest link in this show. I get why you bring her in, like Bacon, because they were a couple who wrote and performed songs together. So Bacon has a little bit of that background. Jennifer Nettles is that background, you know, and you kind of want that dynamic. Unfortunately, I don't think she's a strong actress.
She is definitely the weakest link in the show, like, so far. Like, but she's not actually asked to do a lot, and that's the thing that...
Yeah.
So, like this show is not about that relationship, I feel like. It is very much so Hub's relationship with his mom. He's very much a Southern boy. Played by Beth Grant. By Beth Grant, who's fucking... Right. I mean, like in the two
she's
episodes,
she's never bad. She's never been bad.
Never bad.
Like,
no.
Beth Grant delivered one of my favorite lines in cinema history in Donnie Darko. Mm. She says, yeah. I'm starting to doubt your commitment to sparkle motion.
Sparkle motion.
I fucking love Beth Grant, but she is doing just her absolute best. Like, best of her best here. Like, she plays off everybody so fucking well, and the constant kind of nagging, loving shit that she just gives Kevin Bacon the entire time, it's just like it gets better with her.
Which I can totally tell. I cannot understate like how great their relationship is in the first two episodes. Like that was the thing that like that made this show for me so far is like is their relationship and like, you know, and Bacon just being like a dirtbag in something that we've seen him do before, but not in this kind of capacity. He usually, when he does dirtbag roles, it's usually like as a supporting character, but and this one is
like full on like evil. This is like low level dirtbag stuff that, yeah, I agree. You don't really see from him. Like some of that sleazy stuff, like you go back to like his OG stuff. Like you,
yeah.
Tremors, he's playing a character you're rooting for, but like in hindsight, you can be like, ah, he's a little sleazy.
Exactly.
But this is, and you, like you don't, you've only, you're only two episodes in. He's not the best. He's just not a good dude, you know.
And yeah, that's what you can tell. Like as soon as like the central mystery, and I don't know if it's like it's not until the end, but what got him into hell, you know, it's not good. Like, obviously, it's a hell.
Yeah, you do get to that by the end, and it's like, oh, shit. Like, yeah. Yeah, it was, that's not good, man. Yeah, it's a really, really fun show. I actually recommended it to a guy that I work with too, because he's always looking for new stuff to watch. And I was like, "Oh, hey, I got one for you, man! The whole season's out. You can binge the whole thing." And we had a slow night at work one night, and he was like, "Man, I'm three episodes in. This show is crazy." I'm like, "Yeah, I told you it was really fun." I was like, I love the relationship with him and Beth Grant. It's so good.
Yeah. It really is like for me, like the whole thing of like at least two episodes in, it is very much so about Beth Grant and Kevin Bacon and both of them getting like this kind of, she's getting a lot to chew on, like, which I love because I love her voice. I love her like, so go with me on this because it's going to be about somebody else also, which doesn't work for me. And I know why, but so Beth Grant, like, she's always playing sometimes she's playing a caricature, but it's still good. Here she's playing, like a little bit heightened of a Southern character, but her voice and the dialogue that she's been given by the writers is so kind of, like, good to chew on that you kind of appreciate the whole, like everything she says and everything that Bacon says, because they both do like this weird pseudo Southern accent really well. The thing that stuck out to me was Damon Harriman as Lucky Callahan. Yeah. Doing a Boston accent did not work for me. And
it's a little, and that doesn't get better either, because you get a little more into his past. And so he features a little bit heavier in a couple of later episodes. It's like, yeah, you're not really pulling off that accent, man. It sounds like Affleck from the Dunkin' commercials. It's like an intentionally like over the top Boston accent.
Like, okay, so like here's the thing is that he's Australian, but I know him from, I mean, we all kind of know him from Justified, right? As Dewey. But he was so good in that. And he had such a great, like, we all know it was a fake Southern twang, but it, like, he pulled it off that he, better than he did his, this weird Boston accent. You know, I mean, he's a great actor, but it, the, like, so much so that he played Charlie Manson for David Fincher and fucking Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Like, which always makes me like, wait, you heard the news, right? Did you hear the news?
Oh yeah. They're doing Netflix is doing Fincher is doing the thing with Brad Pitt based on Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, the sequel. It's not a sequel, but the thing that was The Critic, what was supposed to be his last movie, that ended up being dropped because it was too much of a Cliff Booth adventure. Like, it turned out to be like a full-on Cliff Booth thing, taking place in 1977. He's doing that. And I feel like the reason why is the whole thing of Charlie Manson and Mindhunter being interrelated. Like, because, like, I like to think that because he played Charlie Manson and he's like the headcanon, like connective, that Mindhunter takes place in the same world as Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which makes me feel like that's the reason why, like, Quentin's allowing him to do this is, like, first off, I mean, who, like, you get Fincher? I mean, of course, like, you know, it's like, oh, like, Quentin's not going to do this script. I'm not going to throw it away. But if Netflix wants to pay hundreds, like, you know, pay me a couple of million dollars and then David Fincher gets to do it. And, like, you know, I know he can direct Brad Pitt. Go ahead. Which is wild. But back to Damon Harriman. Yeah, I was not like, oh, man, this is bad. This is really bad. That act has got to go. And I think that's a lot to do with the fact that, like, for me, at least, it's his previous like roles, like the thing that I do want to mention is, like, for a Blumhouse movie, like Matt, or a Blumhouse production, like, you know, it's a horror thing, but man, some of that makeup effects work is really fucking great. Like, I'm not usually like
used I think to they did a, especially on a TV show budget. Like, I think they do a really good job. There's some stuff later on where they get into more digital stuff that doesn't really work. It looks more like stuff from maybe the early 2000s.
Okay.
But it's not it's a 25-minute TV show, so it's not detrimental. It's just minutes, a couple of minutes here and there. It's like, I can see that this, like, it's clearly an effect and, you know, it's not really working on screen, but it's not unforgivable. It kind of just adds to the low rent charm that it has going on. It's just, you know, like I said, easily bingeable, incredibly fun. Kevin Bacon having a blast. Beth Grant doing, like, what Beth Grant does, you know. Like, I had her pulled up on IMDb, man. This chick has almost 250 credits on IMDb. Like, she's just fantastic, and she's been in everything. I forgot she was in fucking Speed. Like,
yeah, she is.
Like, oh, yeah, that's right. She's on the bus.
Yeah, she's the one that goes, I can't do it. I can't do it, Annie. And then Annie gets all like, talk about teenage Adam being super upset. I was like, why? Why are you upset? It wasn't your fault. It wasn't your fault that she fucking decided to be psycho and, like, try to endanger everybody. God damn it. But yeah, she totally in that movie. She's like, her and Lin Shaye are, like, the character actresses in genre films. And I feel like she's finally getting what Lin Shaye got with the Insidious franchise, which is, like, a chance to shine in a bigger role than she's ever had before. Like, she's had big roles, but just not like this. Like, not in, like, kind of, like, the showy way that this show has, like, already shown her off in the two episodes I've seen.
It's just an incredibly fun time, and I'm glad I watched it sooner rather than later. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm gonna finish it up, and I'm very happy that I'm watching it, because it's definitely my jam.
I tried to look up to see if they had already greenlit a second season, because it's listed as a mini series, and I mean, kind of sort of spoilers, definitely ends on a cliffhanger.
Okay.
Yeah. So no real resolution to everything that, that happens. So like, I really hope that there's a season two, but it's still fun regardless. Like even with the cliffhanger stuff, it's a lot of fun.
No, absolutely. Okay. Like, I'm definitely, like I said, I'm definitely looking forward to finishing it up. So do we want to get into to Rami Malek's The Amateur?
Yeah, let's talk about The Amateur. A movie I've been pretty excited to see since we saw a trailer, what, like towards the end of last year, beginning of this year?
Yeah.
Not just for Rami Malek. The premise, it just kind of grabbed me. And I'm like, oh, that looks really, really interesting. The cast, of course, in the trailer, you see Rami Malek, John Bernthal, and Lawrence Fishburne. I'm like, oh, I love these people. So we, Steph and I went to go see it yesterday at a matinee. We both really, really enjoyed the movie. I do think it has some issues, and we can talk about that, but I think Rami Malek is fucking fantastic. Lawrence Fishburne does what Lawrence Fishburne does. He's just that stoic kind of thing. And it's over 2 hours slightly. And yeah. I was never bored. The one thing I did ask leaving the theater is why the fuck John Bernthal is in this movie.
A cameo appearance. Like, he shows up in two scenes, right? I think it's because it was a Fox thing and they asked him to do it because of the bear. I mean, he's literally credited as the bear. Yeah. I think that it was like as much a little joke in joke as it was like, can you come out and just do this for us to like have like to give us a, this little bump? Because it's like, this is the kind of move, like, okay, so I liked it a lot. I did have quite a few problems with it. But it's because, so like the reason why I had a problem with it is the same reason, like, okay, so like this movie is not, so like this, like, okay, so I think that we talked about like a certain thing, like, there's a certain trope that gets that we kind of like, I kind of like, which is the twisty turny side, like the twisty turny spy film. And this is not it. Like, this is like what you see is what you get. Like, there's no, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's no twists or turns, right? This is very kind of like the bad guys are who exactly you think they are. The good guys are exactly who you think they are. There's no twist. But the story told, how it's told, the acting involved, the actors involved, it's like what you got. Like, it's a very much like, you know, people throw around throwback, but this is literally like the kind of shit that we used to watch in April and in the fall, right? In the 90s.
Yep.
And for that, like, it does that so fucking well.
Yeah, I think, like, that's the thing that makes it kind of hard to really, like, get into a deep discussion about, is because there isn't a big twist. There isn't a giant action set piece. There's action moments. Like, the chase through, is it Paris? The scene where he's in the hotel and Lawrence Fishburne and the other guy are both chasing him, and Lawrence Fishburne basically has to save his life. Like, that was thrilling, but it's, I mean, 5 minutes of the entire 2+ hours It's like those scenes, and then there's a scene with him and his contact, where they're escaping her house when the Russian army. I mean, spoilers for the movie. The Russian army's like, that's thrilling. But again, it's only like maybe 3 minutes. You have in a 2-hour and 10-minute movie, you have 10 minutes of like real action stuff, and it's divided up over three separate scenes. So there's no Bad Boys 2 like, oh, you know, we're fucking like gonna blow up this helicopter shit kind of thing going on. It's just really relying on you connecting with the characters and being like in that headspace and those moments with them. It works. It's just, it makes it really difficult to get into a deep conversation about, because you're like, this is a competently made thriller. I do think a different director probably could have elevated it. Like, I mean, I hate to say this, but if this were a Tony Scott movie, I think we'd be like, this is some next level shit. This is, it's Man on Fire light.
Mm-hmm. Very much.
And
so, if
Tony Scott's directing it, you're like, holy shit, this is the follow up to Man on Fire we've always fucking wanted. Of course, that's not possible. He passed away. But it's almost to that level. And I don't know. Like, I'd like to see Rami Malek take on more stuff like this. We haven't even talked about Rachel Brosnahan being in it, mostly because she's not really in it.
In it at all.
Like, we don't really get to see her talk. I think it's a little bit of a disservice to the movie that we don't get more of their relationship. Like, and more like, why? I know he doesn't want to leave his job, and he's very like, proud seems like the wrong word, but he's invested in the work he's doing for the CIA. But your wife is going to London on a... do we even know what she does?
No, we don't. We don't. Like, so this is a movie I feel like is missing 20 minutes because they didn't want to make a 2.5-hour movie.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to front load it. But it's implied to me, especially with the conversation that Brenthal and him have at the end of the movie, that he has a fear of flying. And the way that he's trying to solve that is by the building of the Cessna. You remember like you know how you see it at the beginning? And then at the end, I just don't think, like, I think that there was like 10 minutes in the beginning and then another 10 or 15 throughout the movie that filled out the story that we have to imply. And even then, it was a lot of work for me to think, because I was like, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, why is he not going? But it makes sense if you think about it, like, he's this, again, another neurodivergent character, right?
For sure.
Somebody that's on the spectrum. But he has this fear of flying because it's very logical if you think about it, like, oh, okay, well, if I can build something, and his wife gives him this gift of this plane, right? If I build this, I know how it works, and if I know how it works, I can go ahead and do this. But here's the weird part, right? Is that if you don't explain that, it makes no sense that he's flying.
Yeah.
I
think you don't want to have to like handhold everybody, but like, you need a little bit of context for that.
Yes.
Like, you telling me that makes other things in the movie make a lot more sense. There's the scene where he has to hitch a ride in the plane to meet his contact, and I get like trying to strap yourself in because you're in the back of this cargo plane or whatever, mm-hmm. but like the way he does it and how terrified he looks, like, that makes it make a lot more sense. But like, and that this is also where you falter of like, he leaves Langley in the U.S. to go overseas to find these people, there was a plane ride there. Like, you're missing some, like, that could help set the stage, like, make you understand better, like, why he didn't go the first time. Like, him showing him flying and being terrified, and thinking about her as this, like, motivation, which you see a lot of in the movie, while he's flying. Yeah, it's just, I don't want to tear it apart because I really did enjoy the movie.
No, I did it's too. It's just yeah, that, I know.
Like, I start thinking about, like, what could have added to it, and taking this from, like, a 7 out of 10 to, like, a 9 out of 10, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's one of those movies that when you watch it, this is, like, designed to be, like, a cable movie where you end up watching it and you go, damn, that's actually a good movie. And, or you watch it on Saturday.
Funny you say that, because the guy that directed it has mostly only directed television.
Yep.
Sorry, I cut you.
Slow Horses is what got him this. And I've watched an episode of Slow, like, I watched the premiere of Slow Horses, and it's very much, like, it's very much of this kind of ilk. Of this kind of, like, spy.
He seems to understand the, like, pacing for things that aren't, like, giant, big blow-em-up, like, spectacle things. He understands pacing. He understands, like, how to connect with the characters. Like, it gets really into that. And there probably is a 2-hour and 40-minute cut of this movie that's really, really good. The problem is it moves kind of slow. So 2 hours and 40 minutes makes, like, you would be sitting there going, like, getting a little bored at times. So,
yeah. Yeah. Like, as a, like, this is, like, this is what is, like, halfway between a movie and a TV series, or a miniseries. Like, do you know what I mean? Like this could be an AMC, same cast. AMC,
like, 6-episode miniseries, like 45-minute episodes.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, and I'm in it. Yeah,
yeah. Like, I'm very, like, I like it. Like I said, like, I like it a lot. Like, when I got out of it, I was like, damn, that's, like, you don't see things built like this anymore. Like, I mean, literally, Rami Malek, Michael Stuhlbarg, Lawrence Fishburne, Rachel Brosnahan, John Berenthal, Holt McNally, Julianne Nicholson. Like, these are people that are literally, like at the top of their game, and they're unable to do a terrible performance. Like, all of these people, like, are super awesome. And it's in the roles you exactly expect them to be in. Like, Holt McNally, of course you figure that he's the second fiddle in the CIA. And of course, he's going to be the corrupt dude that you can't trust. Of course, Larry Fishburne or Lawrence Fishburne is going to play the mentor that's not really a mentor, and he's in that gray area.
Adrian Martinez is in this movie.
And, yeah,
like, he's not a huge star, but, like, I mean, he's in. You're watching a show that he's in right now that people won't stop talking about. And he's, you know, really, really coming up, and he's not, much like Berenthal, like, he's not in the fucking movie. Like, what?
No.
I don't understand what he's doing there.
And he's just, again, like, I think he's the recipient of bad, like, of an edit cut. Like, the thing that I don't appreciate about the film is that it's super, like, so the thing is, like, okay, the big critique I had is that it's not twisty or turny, but it is super obvious about things. Like, as soon as, like, Inquine shows up, Citrona Blayful, who's great in the episode, like, who's great in it, and she has this moment with Rami that's, like, of comfort and intimacy, that is so heartbreaking, because you know, like, when she shows up, her forehead says, I'm going to be murdered.
Yep.
Like, it's so obvious. It's as obvious as when you see Holt McNally show up as as Charlie's boss.
Yeah, you're like, oh yeah, oh, he's a fucking this guy's not on the level. You know, he's doing illegal shit.
Very illegal shit. And so like that I do not appreciate in whatsoever, because it's like you almost want it to be a like you almost want her to be like the thing that I was hoping, which I knew it wasn't going to happen, is that I was hoping that she was going to be the Bourne Identity thing where she comes back at the end. Like she doesn't like, you know, like she's not dead. She comes back and she's like partially his second lease on life. So I understand why they didn't do that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like it's so disingenuous to me when you know a character is going to be murdered. Like read the room, like don't have her murdered. Like, you know, it's like what I said about the trailer. I'm like, how much do you want to bet Rachel Brosnan is part of this whole fucking thing and she's not dead? Well, I was so fucking wrong about that.
That's the twist you keep expecting.
Yeah.
Is that she's not really dead. That there's some kind, like she was like some kind of spy that he didn't know about. He was getting played the whole, and like while that would, yeah, that would have been exciting and added like something truly like, oh shit, to the movie. But I can appreciate it that it didn't go that route, that it was a more straightforward story. But there's no elevation to that straight story, either with the action or, I'm mostly with the action, because everything is above board and kind of just what you see is what you get, like you said.
Yeah, very much so. Like, very much so. Like, I, it's a very kind of like, like in a lot of ways, Warfare and Amateur are very similar, because it's what you see is what you get, but it's in the execution that makes it special. Like Amateur, I feel like the execution is what makes it special, because it's the way that it's casted. It's the way that it's not the way that. Yeah, I would have loved Tony to direct something like this. I would have loved anybody else to direct it, but it's directed with enough style and competence to where you're never bored in a two plus hour movie. Right now, there is another spy film out right now that runs circles around it, and that's Black Bat. I think we talked about it last.
You say it's out of that. Wait, it's streaming now.
It's streaming now. Yeah,
Yanked out of most of the theaters,
which is so sad, because it is really like. Like, if you want the twisty, turny, naughty, but in both ways, like K-N-O-T-T-Y and N-A-U-G-H-T-Y movie of a spy thriller, they go with Black Bat. But I'm not saying Amateur isn't good. Like, I was super entertained. Like, if it shows up on TV and I'm going through, or if I see it on HBO Max or, like, Hulu, it'll probably be Hulu, Disney Plus. If I see it on there, like, on a Saturday morning and I'm cleaning the house, I'm like, you know, fuck it, I'm going to watch this. And that's not a bad thing, right? It's not. You know, of the movies this week I saw, it's probably like, it's there, right? Like it's better than The Accountant. It's about the same level as Warfare. But they're just two different movies. And so, yeah, you know, yeah. Like, actually, I saw a movie on Saturday night that
we have not talked. I was going to ask you about that, because I feel like we don't, there's not much more to say other than, like, this is a really fun time. It's a great matinee. I mean, it's a great, like, just to go out and see a movie and not fucking walk out going, like, I didn't like that. Like, there's nothing, there's things in the movie that, like, I think the ending could use a little work. And I think it's at least one big action set piece. Like, Tony Scott would have taken the script, looked at it, and say, okay, one of these things, we have to amp up the action. Probably him and her, escaping their house with the Russians. Like, it would not have been a 2.5-3 minute like escape. It would have been a you know, a good 5-10 minute multiple chases, you know, like,
yeah,
the car going like, and on the boats, and then like,
yeah,
it would have just been this huge thing. He would have amped everything up, and instead they keep it very, very low key. I do think all of the kills he does are really fucking great. Like, all of those, yes, it's really ingenious.
And Scott would have been great. It would have been Enemy of the State 2.0, which I'm not
I brought up Enemy of the State. I brought it up in, when we were walking out, me and Steph were talking about it. I was like, at first I said it kind of reminded me of Man on Fire, but like, a light version of that, like I said.
Yeah,
and then later we went to Walmart to get a couple of things. I was like, oh, you know what it reminded me of? Enemy of the State, another, yep, Scott movie. And you know, it's one of the, like, I walked out, it's weird, but I walked out going like, God, I'm really fucking sad that Tony Scott is dead.
Dude, that's me every week after I see something. Like, there'll be something where I'll be like, man, why is Tony, man,
it
Tony
sucks.
Like,
I mean, yeah, he had an incurable cancer, like, yeah, we don't need to get,
no,
into it, but like, it made, and not knocking the guy that directed it, who I looked up and then promptly forgot his name. That's terrible.
James Hawes.
James
Hawes. Which, like, you know, like most British BBC directors, has directed a bunch of Doctor Who episodes. And that's not knocking him. It's just, that's, you know, it's very of a style. It's polished, but it doesn't have that additional pizzazz that you want from this. Like this is a movie that I feel like Paul Greengrass, the guy who directed the Bourne movies, most of the Bourne movies, could have done something. Yeah.
He would have done it with that shaky game shit, and I would have hated that. I do think it looks phenomenal, and this director is also on board. I think he's the executive producer, and will be directing a few episodes of Lanterns, a show we're super excited about, which doesn't give me pause for that show. I think he is like very, very capable, which is the kind of thing you need in television for sure. You need somebody who knows what a show is supposed to look like, how to film the characters so that you're not disjointed. Like, it's going to be great. This is only like his, I think he's done a couple of movies that were like pre-television work, but like in the last couple of years, he's done this, and he did the Anthony Hopkins movie, the World War II movie. Well, it's not about World War II, but he like saved a bunch of kids in concentration camps, right? Very Schindler's List-y kind of thing. Something. It's like in this, not in this life. I don't remember.
Like, one in this life or something like that. Yeah, no,
yeah,
you're absolutely right. Like,
so. very like, hey, you're gonna cry while you're watching this, that kind of movie, which I imagine is exactly what would happen if you watch that movie. It seems like a really tear-jerking thing, but yeah, like, a lot of fun. I want to see Rami Malek do some more action stuff. I think he's pretty good in this. He gets a couple of those moments like Denzel gets in Man on Fire and various other Tony Scott things. He gets to say like those little, they're not punchy Schwarzenegger lines. It's just, you know, like Denzel telling, I wish you had more time.
Exactly.
You know, like him telling that guy, like, if you jump, you might survive the blast, you know? Like, it's that kind of stuff, but he does it with that, like, nerd, scared kind of thing. And you know, it really, really works. I think he really is the biggest reason to see the movie. I wish it had just one big action set piece. So, but yeah, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, it's easily a 7 out of 10. Like for me, I just wish it had something that bumped it up, you know, way up to that kind of thing.
You are 100% right in regards to like it just, it's missing one piece, you know, or like, you know, an edit.
Because if you put the big action set piece in there, you can cut out maybe a couple of other things and then add more of the character stuff, and then all of a sudden nobody cares that it's 2.5 hours long.
Yep, 100%.
So
100% right.
So yeah, we can end very briefly. I haven't seen it. I don't know when or if we'll see it. I Stephanie's a big Jack Black guy. Like, she loves Jack Black. And I was like, let's we go see Minecraft? And she was like, I don't know. So you got to see Minecraft.
Yes, I did. My audience didn't, like, ruin the theater, thank God.
What is going on? Like, man, the people are having these, like, fucking rowdy reactions to watching Minecraft.
So this is the thing. Like, there's a section of kids, and they're still kids because they're fucking idiots. But the, like, in their 20s that grew up basically, because I mean, if you think about it, Minecraft has been around since, like, you know, 2010, 2011, and it was designed specifically for kids and to, like, you know, building stuff and all that. So, like, the audience that made this $150 million opening and continues to make it, like, a huge thing, are a bunch of guys and women, from what I understand, too. There's a large contingent because of the crafting of it all, that grew up on Minecraft. And once the thing was out that, once the word was out that this was not just a studio product, but Jared Hess was actually a super fan of Minecraft and made a movie for Minecraft people, it went just bug nuts. And it's like, the only way that people have described it to me that accurately works, like for me, is that it's something like akin to like Avengers, and seeing stuff on screen that you've dreamed about for 15 plus years or all your life as a kid, and actually being able to see it in real life. And then their reactions are exactly what you expect from video game fans. Like, I mean, come on, let's be honest. Like, video game fans, like of the fandoms, like, they are the ones that, like, are constantly associated with physical altercations. And I know that sounds fucking terrible, but it's, I mean, we just saw it over the weekend, literally kids destroying shit, right? Now, of course, yeah. It's all overinflated. It was only, like, 4 or 5 theaters. Yeah. It was just, like I was talking to somebody about this, and I was like, you know, it's very interesting how social media has taken over for the news media in the way that, do you remember New Jack City?
Yeah.
Do you remember, it was only 2 theaters that had bad reactions, but if you watched the news media, you would have thought it was
widespread. Like, yeah, this happened in 2 places, and like, it wasn't that big of a deal. Yeah,
exactly. But I will say this about the Minecraft movie. It's a lot of fun. You don't need to know Minecraft because, like, Jared Hess has done a very smart job in creating a movie that is actually a movie, but it's also, it's a portal movie. It's a legend movie. Like, you know, it's a journey and portal movie. We all have seen portal movies before, so we all know that trope. But what's smart is how the execution is done and how it teaches you about Minecraft while giving you the legend of the journey film of the kind of Lord of the Rings style, like, adventure that you're going to go on. but it's also very meta contextual because, like, it's funny because you watch two of these, like, you know, they're a fellowship and then they break up and their journeys are two separate journeys. And it's funny to watch the chaos of the dudes, but then also the kind of straight linearity and unchaotic, like almost kind of quaint adventure that the ladies go on. It comments a lot on, like I said, like video games and video game tropes, but also it's really fucking fun. Like, I'm not gonna lie, it's a lot of fun to watch this thing that I have no idea about. But if you've seen it, like, it takes a lot from, like, anything. Like, it takes a lot from other movies. You know, is it the worst movie in the world? No, not even close. Is it the best movie? No, but it falls somewhere into like a Saturday matinee. Damn, that was fun. You know what? Like if there's a Black Friday deal for the Blu-ray or the 4K, I'm definitely buying it for $9.99. Like, do you know, like, it's that kind of movie, or $7.99, and then I'll have it and I'll watch it occasionally. Like, you know, every once in a while, like, you know what? I want to see, like, it's like a Jack Black movie. It's a fucking Jack Black movie. Like, you know, like Jack Black, it's like, I watch School of Rock once every couple of years because it's a fun movie. I watch Nacho Libre once, like at least once a year. Why? Because I fucking love the movie. I like Jack Black.
So I have a question. It came out probably yesterday, sometime this week, in the last couple of days, that Jack Black was not the original person who was playing Steve. Is that who it is?
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah, Steve. I don't know if you saw this.
No.
Yeah, so Jack Black was not who was supposed to play Steve. He stepped in at the last minute. I imagine because he has a relationship with Jared Hess. And also for paycheck. But interestingly enough, the original actor, and he had to drop out because of scheduling conflicts, was Matt Berry.
Oh, you mean What We Do in the Shadows, Matt Berry?
Yep.
That would have been a very... Okay, so that makes sense.
It's a different movie, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, and even I was like, oh, that would be a very different movie.
I don't think that would have worked. To be perfectly honest with you, the way that
Jack Black has cartoon character energy, Matt Berry doesn't really have that kind of, like, he can be wacky, but it's in this like self-serious kind of style. And when I read that, I was like, I think that makes a very different movie.
Like, okay, so, like, here's the thing. if that happens, I don't know if it works, because Momoa and, like, part of the reason why this movie works is the energy that Momoa and Black give off, and they feed off of one another. Like, the thing that I took away from this movie is that they're going to make, like, 7 Minecraft movies, and Momoa and Black are going to star in these, like, they're Hope and Crosby, but... Yeah. Like, they're like, okay, so like the best way I can describe them is they're like Black and Momoa are the metalhead wrestling equivalent of Hope and Crosby. Like, that's who they are. And if they make 7 of these Minecraft movies, I will not A, not be mad, but also B, I think that They give off the energy that they are real friends in real life. Like, at the end, like, it's like they're just kind of like winking and nodding at one another, like, we're getting to fucking do this, bro. And it's like Momoa is like, oh man, I can finally be the freak that I've always tried to be in movies. Like, it, like, okay, so like the thing I took away from Momoa is like, oh man, I cannot wait to see his Lobo, because this is like, this is like Momoa unhinged. Like, not, I don't have to be a badass, even though I'm going to take my persona as a badass and like lampoon it every chance I get. But then it's also like, oh, but I have Jack Black to bro down with me, and Jack Black thinks I'm funny, and so we're going to be funny. Like, there's a moment, there's a chase scene That is the funniest chase scene. And I can only imagine parents are mortified of this chase scene because it's literally Jack Black and Momoa 69ing each other. Like they're in the 69 position, grabbing each other's hair, trying to get away from like flying things. And at the end of it, Momoa goes, "Why the hell do you smell like Gorgonzola?" And then Black saying, "Because I keep Gorgonzola in my pocket at all times." Like, this is a PG fucking movie, dude. And like, literally, you could hear, like, as soon as they are like crotch to crotch, the entire fucking audience was laughing and cheering, and especially the little kids. Like, you could only imagine parents are mortified at this, right? Because it's just like, oh, how am I going to explain that, right? But it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter because it's funny. But that's the kind of movie it is. It's the kind of movie that has Jack Black has a Minecraft, like, has a Minecraft werewolf as his pet that's named Derek. And, like, when he after years of not having Derek, like not seeing Derek because he's been captured and they reunite, it's like this emotional moment, but it's like a Jack Black emotional moment. That's the kind of fucking movie this is. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's stupid, but you know what? It works. Like, I'm one of those guys that I'm not too highbrow to where like I put my nose in the air. Oh no, it's a Minecraft. I don't want to watch this movie. A bunch of kids throw popcorn. I don't give a shit about that. Tell me it's a good movie. The funnier part is that, like, it's weird that you tell me that Barry is in the was cast. He's a, like, I recognized his voice and Jermaine Clement's voice. So yeah. It's like Jared Hess is kind of like,
well, so
he's kind of fucking genius.
Am I wrong? His second movie was with those guys. Maybe not Barry, but I think Jermaine Clement was in it.
Yeah, it's the weird ass one where
The guy has he made any movie?
Yeah, that, like, I know.
Weird. Gentlemen Broncos.
Yeah, that was so, after Not Great. And
Jermaine Clement. I don't know if Matt Berry's in it or not, but Clement and Barry are. I mean, they're.
Yeah. Have you seen that movie?
I here's the thing. I can't remember if I saw it. Like, I remember it coming out. I remember the trailer. I remember being like, I kind of like that Jermaine Clement guy. Because, like, that was right at the height of the Concords, right?
Yes, Flight of the Concord.
Yeah, and I don't remember if I ever got around to seeing it.
Find it and watch it. I think it's on Hulu. I mean, it has Mike White, Jennifer Coolidge, Sam Rockwell. Like,
Mike White's done enough to piss me off. I think I'm done with that guy.
Yeah, I know. Nobody likes, I obviously watched your White Lotus, which is so hilarious. But what's weird about this Minecraft movie, like, ultimately, is that it went through a lot of hands. And
dude, I've been working on this movie for a decade.
Yes.
A decade. I mean,
so much so that, like, somebody we just talked about today, Rob McElhenney was supposed to be directing, like, and I can only imagine that would have been such a dirtbag version of that movie, was initially attached to direct. And then it went through a whole bunch of hands. But I will tell you, Jared Hess was probably the best person, other than maybe, I also kind of am curious, like, what John Francis Daly and his directing guy, yeah, the guys who did Dungeons & Dragons, those would be the only other guys that I would have been like, oh, you know what, they probably could have pulled it off. Which is so, go ahead.
I was going to say, I did want to ask you about the score. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious if it was, I assume it's good, but, like, is it memorable? Mark Mothersbaugh did the score, which I think is,
yes,
he does excellent work, but like sometimes his work is like, this is brilliant. And sometimes it's more like, oh yeah, that's right, Mark Mothersbaugh did that.
So it's weird because you can tell, okay, so it's very much a score of two of like parents. So like at the beginning, when you're in the real world, it's very Napoleon Dynamite, way that the real world is presented. So it's very Wes Anderson, right? The score, you instantly know it's, yeah, it's got that thing. When it goes into the Minecraft, it becomes this epic, legendary journey. Now, again, it's this epic, legendary. Like, okay, so you know the Jack Black Wonder Boy song?
Yeah, Wonder Boy. I love
it's
that song.
Epic. Oh, I fucking love that song. It's that's what it reminded me of, the epicness of it. It because it's both epic, it's metal, but it's adventure, like it gives you exactly what you would want in an adventure, but it doesn't, but it feels like the, like you know the Steve Zissou score, you know how like yep, when they go off to the island it becomes a yep score, but bigger, because that one is kind of small but it's still propulsion to it. That's exactly what Mothersbaugh does with the mind. So yeah, no, absolutely, he does. He does a great job. He was actually kind of a brilliant choice because tonally, the real world, you get the real world along because of like the uniqueness and what you're in store for. Like, I mean, this is a movie where you know, as Jack Black is narrating the beginning of the movie, he's a little kid and he's in the Steve uniform. And when he grows up, he's in the Steve uniform. Like,
I always love that. That's, I don't know why that joke always works, but it always works for me. They do it. They do it kind of sort of in the monkey with the tuxedo thing or the suit thing. And it just always works. Where it's just like you're in the same clothes. Like, what are we doing? I think we'll get around to watching eventually, whether it's in theaters or not, we'll see. But her being a Jack Black fan, I think we'll see eventually.
Yeah, like it's such that if you're a Jack Black fan, like see it on the big screen, like see it on IMAX. Like I saw it on IMAX, and it like literally, it's not bad, but it's like. There's an energy to the movie while you're in it with a bunch of kids that is infectious. It's not like a thing where you get annoyed with them, but it's like what I was telling my wife was like it made me feel like a 13-year-old again in the best way possible. Like it was okay to laugh at Jason Momoa getting his ass kicked by a chicken and a Frankenstein baby. Like, literally, it made it okay. It made it okay to watch Jennifer Coolidge have scenes with a Minecraft non-person player or an NPC.
Yeah.
And her have a love affair with it. And it be okay and not the stupidest thing in the world. Like, yeah. I never rolled my eyes in it because, like, the energy was such that it's like, it's a fucking Minecraft movie. It's like, I know, like, we just talked a couple of weeks ago about, like the studio lampooned this perfectly, right? Like, with the Kool-Aid shit.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what this is. But
then when they do it right, it's just like, I don't know, man, I'm having a lot of fun with this. I totally get it. I'd say we'll probably see it this weekend, except I assume Friday is Sinners. I'm guessing we're both going to go see Sinners.
We might have to record on Sunday because I don't think I'm going to be able to get to it because my wife wants to see that. I mean, she's a huge horror fan.
Gotcha. And
I don't know if we're going to be able to see it on Friday night. But definitely. Sinners is definitely the e-ticket for I mean no question about it, like sure. I mean that, like everything I've heard just makes me want to go see it more.
We'll work it out. Well, hell, if we don't record till Sunday, I might get to see Minecraft and Sinners. So, we'll see. So, definitely talking Sinners next week. Along yes. with you know anything else that comes up. Go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com. More importantly, go out to the movies, not just to see Minecraft, but there's a lot of good stuff playing right now.
There's a ton of good stuff, or even just interesting. Like, there's enough out there where you like whatever your taste is, you're able to see.
And it sucks that I'm glad Minecraft is lighting it up, but it's like, well, I want Amateur to do a little bit more business. It sucks that Death of a Unicorn didn't do, more business. It sucks that Mickey 17 didn't do more business. It's like, there's so many varied things out there that, you know, we're still only showing up for the tentpole shit. So, go check out everything over at xwingfiles.com or go check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where there's I took a little bit of a break. It was a really hard week for me. I got sick, but we're going to be back next week full swing with a lot of content, a lot of 4K reviews. I've got a bunch of 4K discs that I have to review that are like elite things that I'm actually looking forward to reviewing. Sometimes there's stuff that you're just like, oh, I don't know. But this week it's like all good stuff. So be on the lookout for that. And like Logan said, we'll be talking next week, more than likely Sinners.
Yeah.
Which I think we're both super excited about.
Yep. I am looking forward to it. Can't wait. So we will we'll see you guys then. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Kal-El. Number 8, The Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But they're probably all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.